Welcome back to Phantom Island. My name is Stephen Godfrey. That's Ryan Nanny, and we're brought to you by our friends at Homefield. Ryan Nanny, in the midst of the crazy end of the college football season and just the general busyness of what the, you know, what the hip business people call Q4, you posed a question to me and sent me on a side quest. Can you repeat that question?
It's kind of vague, but I asked you, I was like, hey, what happened to sports movies? This was a genre that was, when we were younger, kids to, all the way up to, like, I would say our early adulthood, was a pretty thriving part of the movie business. Had a lot made, of varying quality. I'm not here to tell you, like, every sports movie is worth watching, but it feels like it is a thing that has dwindled, not just even in terms of like what's out in movie theaters, because that's a whole separate big conversation. But
right.
I feel like sports movies are just not a thing we make that. I know there are some. I haven't seen Ephus yet. I've heard it's good. I would like to. But I don't know. It feels like it's a thing that's gone away. So if I have to distill it down, what happened to sports movies? Where'd they go?
Okay. First off, don't ever besmirch the performative ability of Daniel Stern in Rookie of the Year. Comedic legend.
I never would.
All right. Comedic legend. The answer to this is very similar to some of our other why doesn't this happen anymore or whatever happened to questions that we've asked on Phantom Island. It turns out that people of our age are trapped in a prison of nostalgia. Not to get this episode off on like too dark of a tone here.
Yeah.
But I had what I thought was like a quick answer to you, but I also realized the limits of my own intelligence quite often. So I went out and sought out a friendly expert, friend of the program, Corey Woodroof, who holds this amazing dual title right now, which is he works for USA Today's For the Win, ostensibly as a sports writer, but he is also a actual like one of the critics registered on Rotten Tomatoes. He's been writing movie reviews for like, I think he says in the interview, he started in like elementary school or something.
Okay.
And so he is a RT certified critic and crushes films. He'll give you his letterbox later in the show. Corey lives here in Nashville. He's been a college professor. He's been a sports writer. And so he would understand the duality here of sports movies as well as the movie industry. He's one of the friendliest people I know. But he is also very bleak in his assessment of kind of like folks our age saying like, well, whatever happened to X? Before we get started, what to you is a sports movie, Ryan?
All right. I know we want to keep this intro short, so I won't belabor it. I would say a sports movie is any movie where the playing of a sport. And I'm fine with generous interpretation. Like, I'm fine if we say Bring It On as a sports movie. I'm not going to get into arguments about, like, cheerleading's not. No, I don't want to do that. But any movie where the competition of a sport is a prime, is either the A or B plot of the movie in some way, shape, or form. Like, that to me is the simplest way for me to define what a sports movie is. Like, is Bull Durham is a relationship movie, but it's also a sports movie.
Right. Okay. Well, this matters greatly into asking the question of whatever happened to, because sports are in a lot of movies.
Sure.
But the idea of in our mind's eye might be something is where it's less about, oh, they don't make movies about sports anymore. And it's just they don't make that kind of movie I remember anymore.
Maybe with sports taking the front of the thing instead of more becoming like a secondary or tertiary element.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil the conversation I'm about to have with Corey, but one of the funniest parts of my research was pulling together the various databases that have been created on, like, by Hollywood analysts and even people in the sports industry of like what is a sports movie, so we can define like the parameters of what's worked in the market and what hasn't. Wikipedia cast the widest net possible, and you'll hear me talk about this with Corey. Ryan is. Is Fast and Furious 23, is that a sports movie?
I don't think of the Fast and Furious movies as sports movies, no. Although, I think if I had to pick one, You could talk me into Tokyo Drift being a sports movie. That one specifically.
You know what? I'm going to say something incredibly shocking on a podcast. I have never seen a Fast or Furious film, so I will have to take your word on Tokyo Drift.
You have disappointed one person in Nashville with that. It's my wife. My wife loves the Fast movies.
She's had this conversation with me on what are you doing with your life?
Yeah.
Take 2 days off and watch the entire franchise.
That's true.
You mentioned EFIS kind of somewhat randomly. Obviously, I recorded this interview with Corey the day before we're recording this, yesterday as we're recording this, and then earlier in the week as y'all are listening to this. EFIS got brought up kind of randomly. It's starting to make some year-end top lists. Mm-hmm. It is a baseball movie. We're going to talk about it in the interview. A lot of the memories of our particular age set involve a lot of baseball movies. So 100%. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
You asked the question this year. We might have an award season dark horse that is a very pure baseball movie. We're going to talk about it on the interview. But then also, I found it a little funny that you asked me this question and I said about in my research, and without naming the film, this year, the highest grossing sports movie of all time was released. And I'll let you guys guess. But first, before we get to Corey, we're going to hear about our friends at Homefield.
One of the recurring themes we run into over here at Phantom Island is the treacherous nature of nostalgia. How filtered remembrances of the past can kind of trick your brain in ways that are not really that helpful to understanding how the world used to work or how it actually works now. But Homefield Apparel's crew necks, t-shirts, hats, joggers, hoodies, etc., these are nostalgia for your body, not for your brain. This nostalgia is cozy, comfortable, stylish, and most importantly, accurate. Did Colorado really win 3 straight Big 8 football titles from 1989 to 1991? Yes. And the t-shirt says so. Was Texas Tech's women's basketball team the best in the nation in 1993? 100%. Check the garment. From the 2007 Virginia Tech bass fishing title to the ancient years long forgotten, when football dumpsters like Florida and Florida State were winning championships, Homefield is here to clothe you in the better times without exaggeration. All right, let's get into the episode.
Every rustle in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord, or leave me here.
All right, it's time for a guest to tell us something with expertise. Corey, please introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Corey Woodruff. I am a writer for USA Today's For the Win. I have been cramming movies into my brain ever since I was a kid, and I am glad to be here today.
Corey, you write for the Win over at USA Today. You are a sports writer, but you are also, this is a credential I don't know any other sports writer having. You are one of the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, right?
Yeah. You can find my reviews there from time to time. It's, whenever they get into the mood of posting things. It's fun. It's very, very strange to kind of like have sports as my career, but movies has always kind of been my, ever since I was a kid, kind of following through with it. So it's a very strange dichotomy to be able to say you can kind of do both things.
Okay, so as someone who writes sports, but then you've been, how long have you been writing, actually, like publishing, like a film reviewer, movie
critiques?
Oh,
man, since like high school. I mean, that's my
thing.
So this
has been consistent, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I remember Facebook used to have a thing called Flickster, and I would go on and log the movie. It was like Letterboxd for Facebook.
Okay.
It was way, way back in the day. And I wanted to be a movie critic when I was a kid. And, thankfully it kind of turned out that way in its own way. So, it's definitely kind of my one true love of all things. Even when the Falcons suck, I can still, have a good movie to watch. That helps.
Which is often. This is why we're mm-hmm. constantly talking about movies instead of the Falcons. All right. Mm-hmm. So simple question that we pose every week, some are simple, some are not so simple. What happened to the sports movie? Now, you could tell me a number of things. Maybe mm-hmm. we're overreacting, but it feels like fewer and fewer traditional sports movies get made these days, or mm-hmm. maybe they get made and we don't notice, they don't enter the zeitgeist, or maybe people just don't care. Maybe it's just not what they want to see when they go to the theater.
It's interesting. What happened to sports movies is what happened to really most movies that don't have superheroes in them, you know, okay. or like big IP characters, right? Like, you know, if I was in an elevator and somebody asked me, hey, what happened to sports movies? And I had like 30 seconds to tell somebody, I would say that just the environment stopped being productive for them to grow. In ways that would reach people how they were used to having things reached, right? Like, I think that at the end of the day, sports movies operated in their own ecosystem back when movies used to have just all these little swirling ecosystems around them in genre. And, you know, sports movies can be dramas, they can be comedies, you know, they can be, you know, thrillers in certain senses. Like, you can, romantic films, like, again, a sports setting is in and of itself very easy to kind of bend and manipulate into what you want to do with it. And as the world got smaller for movies, the opportunities for those to reach audiences and find kind of the pole positions that they had in the culture just kind of dissipated. So that's kind of the short answer, but I know here that long answers are usually where we like to thrive in our thinking. So that is the exciting part to get into.
So when I started out on this question, I pulled I went to everyone's most trusted source, which is Wikipedia, and I found a list that's so hilarious. I feel like I need to include it with you because let's just say they cast a very, very wide net of what a sports movie is. So that's probably where we should start. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I am on the very cusp of Gen X and millennial. Mm-hmm. I think you consider yourself on the other side of millennial to Gen Z. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
So
So what we consider a sports movie, we might need to start there, but what I would assume when someone says sports movie, I would think right off the top of my head, a lot of baseball is what we grew up on. So everything from The Sandlot to Field of Dreams, Bull Durham, quintessential sports movie. Maybe something as I got a little bit older. I think I was in college when Miracle came out. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of classic feel good, really like Hollywood film about a real life sports event. The Wikipedia list is a little bit wider. According to Wikipedia, the number one highest sports grossing film of all time is Inside Out 2, the Pixar film, because there is a subplot in it about ice hockey.
Yes, so, that's true.
The next 2, 3, 4, 5 are all Fast and Furious installments. Again, not necessarily what I would call a sports film. Mm-hmm. After that, Forrest Gump for the classic combination, Corey, of American football and ping pong. Mm-hmm. The first legitimate entry into the top 10 of highest grossing sports films of all time, and maybe this pushes back on our question, is it's a film from this year in 2025, and that's F1. Mm-hmm. F1 is interesting to me because you and I we've talked about this offline as friends and movie fans. F1 comes about because of a number of things: foreign investment, mm-hmm. Apple getting involved in making films, which it looks like they're not super interested in making blockbusters, even though F1 did well. But there was a lot of American interest, growing American interest in F1 specifically. So they made a movie about it. It did really well. They also attached one of the few like true movie stars that we have left in Brad Pitt. Before that, it's hard to find a more recent comparable sports film. So for instance, we have everything from like this list includes Gladiator. It includes, for some reason, Alita Battle Angel, the Cars franchise cartoon. Probably not what you and I are considering to be sports films, right?
Not at all.
What if I said, hey, recommend a great sports film of the last couple of years, where would you go first?
First, I would go to Challengers. To me, is the best sports film of the decade so far, outside of one that I'm sure we can talk about here in a second, that we both saw last week. But it's tricky, right?
Yeah.
Like, sports movies now can mean a lot of different things. But again, the concept of a sports movie, I think, for a lot of people is tied to nostalgia, right?
Okay.
I think that the idea of a sports movie, and people wonder where did sports movies go, I think a lot of that comes into the style in which they were produced, right? Like, Hollywood, for a time, especially right around, you know, I think Rocky, you know, people have always made sports movies, right? But Rocky right. was the movie that it won Best Picture. I think that when you talk about trends in Hollywood, it sparked a bit of a smaller one. Like, again, you know, Scorsese had Raging Bull a few years later. So it's not like, you know, that type of a boxing movie still was around. But the inspirational underdog, like, it's a classic trope in storytelling, right? But mm-hmm. you kind of saw that, you know, with a layer put onto it of, oh, wow. So it's like sports movies can... they can carry an element of prestige to them. They can carry an element of like cultural relevance to them. And Hollywood was changing at that time. Sports movies were not popping off when movies like The Godfather were, you know, it's like that was not what New Hollywood was interested in. But, you know, post 1975 Jaws, people wanted those type of stories. People were kind of tired of having to look at, you know, the horrors of the American experience through the lens of people who, yeah, it's just like, you know, people wanted something to take their mind off things, right? Mm-hmm. And sports has always been that. It's the great distraction that we've always had throughout the history of man. So you kind of go into the 80s, Chariots of Fire wins Best Picture. Like, you know, you have sports movies are starting to kind of gather steam. People like Hoosiers, right? Like Bull Durham comes out, Field of Dreams. Like it starts to become in and of itself its own ecosystem, right? So 80s, 90s, sports movies are everywhere. They're not only everywhere. Film itself is at the center of pop culture. So these movies that if they were released today probably wouldn't register too much. So like, again, if Field of Dreams came out this weekend, I don't know how many people would go see it, right? Like if you took a movie star comparative to where Kevin Costner was at that point, people are going to see the trailer for that and go, oh, I think I'm going to wait for streaming. That's just going to be their initial reaction. Because again, Costner was a big movie star at that point in his career. But right now we see movie stars get attached to things all the time, you know, of a certain type of film that people just tend to want to wait on. So it's very tricky because sports movies, 80s, 90s, you have the adult plays, right? Major League, you know, Field, all that type of stuff. But then mm-hmm. there is the element I think that a lot of people are concentrated on, which is kind of the inspirational family film, right? Like, again, The Sandlot gets referenced a lot.
Yes. There seems to be a spate of baseball movies.
Yes.
And I think most of this takes place before the MLB strike in 1995, which really, really takes the wind out of baseball until the steroid era starts. But, and again, some of this is the poison of perspective, and I'm of a certain age where I was hitting the video store for these things, but Little Big League. Yep. Angels in the Outfield, Bull Durham for the parents, Major League for the parents, but we definitely snuck that one as well as the mini, the, you know, the subsequent sequels. Baseball dominated, but then also in the family film genre, the Mighty Ducks, maybe that's the first film to ever actually inspire a real sports franchise into existence. Yep. Was there something about the late 80s to like late 90s where sports was particularly, like why was sports so particularly popular in the family film genre? And those films all did great box office and made their money back. Plus, what was going on? Were we better sports fans as kids than other generations?
Videos. Sports movies, I would imagine, sold a crap ton of videos.
You're talking about the sort of classic VHS blockbuster video era, right?
Yeah, we're talking like clamshell classics here. Like we are going for, and again, this would be one of my big things. What happened to sports movies? The decline of physical media. I think is a huge contributor to a lot of different things. Because again, a big thesis that I want to hammer on is that sports movies are not unique. There are a lot of different styles of film and variations of film that have really struggled to find their foothold in the post-streaming era. You can talk about comedies. You can talk about mid-budget action thrillers. You can talk about all these, you know, old school action movies, you know, that starred all the guys from The Expendables. Like, again, you have all these different little types of, you know, quote unquote subgenres that have really struggled to gain their foothold because when Hollywood greenlights movies now, they are not looking for the same results as they did back when the video cassette boom was happening, back when, you know, movie stars were getting projects greenlit, back when you could make big sports movies that would make a lot of money and you didn't need an accomplished director to do so. So these are kind of some of the points I'll be hitting on today, but like you know, speaking specifically to that little spat of like baseball films, family and all that. I mean, you think about Mighty Ducks, like Mighty Ducks lives past the theater. That is a, I'm going to go to Walmart, Target, wherever, buy the VHS, and then I get something I can pop on at a birthday party while the parents are having beers in the backyard, right?
So, so it's not just, hang on. So it's not just the video era we're talking about, the idea that you had this secondary market of, I'm going to take my kids. So streaming just doesn't exist. Let's start there.
Nope.
You don't have this embarrassment of this overflow of content the way like my kids do, where we have multiple apps in the house that have thousands of hours of streaming content. What you would do is your kids are driving you nuts. You'd go to the movie theater much more regularly to see it, to see the film. You would then hit up the retail outlet to buy the, what, $19.99, you know, VHS cassette. And then you would watch them on repeat. And that's how these franchises were built. Whereas now, it's just, it's kind of the same excuse we have for everything, which is there's so much option that everything sort of, you just feel a sort of paralysis by that, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like, you know, if I'm going to kind of put this all into a pie chart, right? Of like what happened in sports movies, it's going to be these pillars. Okay. So we've touched on the decline in box office viability or like kind of home video sales, right? Again, people are not turning out to see these films in theaters when they're coming out. Because again, there is still sports movies that are produced. Where are they going? They're going to streaming. They're going to hit the theater for a couple of weeks until you get like a big PVOD play. So it's probably going to shock people to know this, but if you had just like told a random person that movies about, you know, Giannis and his brothers from Greece and LeBron James when he was in high school have come out in the last couple of years,
and I would have no idea that those movies.
You would have no idea, right?
Yeah, and again, I think I value myself like a movie fan.
Yes, and again, these are anonymous projects. One went to Disney Plus with Giannis and his brothers, and then one went to Peacock, which was a LeBron James. I think he oversaw the film as well, talking about his high school team. So,
so they came out.
Yeah,
it just they never captured any form of zeitgeist.
No.
Because not at all. So this is the problem that faces pretty much any piece of content across any platform right now, is how do you actually create a majority mind share towards your project?
Correct. So, you know, again, if you're going for just like one of the easy answers, it's just that the mid-budget film basically became one of the biggest things to prop up streaming. Because at the end of the day, you could have enough of interest in kind of giving people something that they used to go see in theaters that never made that much money. Again, they made respectable amounts of money because they were on respectable budgets. You know, there's always, you know, differences, concessions. But again, like a movie like Miracle was not topping box office charts for months, right? Like, again, a movie like that is made for a modest budget. Makes a modest amount of money. You get the home video sales factored in, and it gives that film the type of life that you want it to have, right? That's a movie you get your dad for his birthday on DVD 20 years ago. And now it's like a movie like that, what's the commercial viability? Like, again, you were able to get one movie star in on that, Kurt Russell. Other than that, like, I think Noah Emmerich's in that movie too, but like, you know, there's not a lot of people. And again, we can talk about the filmmakers who made these types of movies here in a second, but you know, the way that we consume media has impacted films like this, because at the end of the day, like, you know, it's hard to people to imagine, but like people weren't able to rent movies from their homes until the mid 2000s when video on demand really started to rise, when cable companies would offer these kind of, you know, on demand services where people could go find movies that have come out. You pay roughly what you're going to play at Blockbuster, maybe a little bit more, and you don't have to go to the store. But again, like, people used to actually have to go see movies in theaters regardless of when they came out. Because again, direct to video had kind of a connotation to it. People didn't want to watch movies that were going direct to video because often those were seen as lesser products, right? Like, those are Disney animated sequels that got made for a penny and made a ton of money, right? Like, again, this is all trending in a direction where theaters need product. They need things to play. So you had this widespread of options where filmmakers could pick and choose. And quite frankly, we can get into the directors now. You didn't need Luca Guadagnino or Josh Safdie or a big name director to do a sports movie that had a moderate budget. Like, I'm going to go through right now some names of filmmakers And if you can tell me what one of these people made or how they're connected to sports films, I would be impressed.
Okay. All right. Oh, I didn't know there'd be a quiz. All right.
Let's, Yeah. I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. Ron Shelton, Peyton Reed, David Anspaugh.
Do you want me to go one at a time? Ron Shelton is Bull Durham, right?
Yes, that is Bull Durham. Okay.
Okay.
So you got that one. Also did White Man Can't Jump and Tin Cup. So let's start building a patchwork of all these.
That man has three classic sports films.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But you know what's interesting about those three films right off the top of my head? Adult fare. And when I say adult, I mean basically not children. I don't mean I'm not talking about like porn. Adult fare, which has been sort of the one block in the in movie going to the movies, theatrical releases, physically going to the multiplex that we've seen the greatest decline in, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right. So Peyton Reed, I know Peyton Reed did. Well, I know he's been sucked into the Marvel universe, but he did Bring It On. Is that the sports movie? Okay, all right. I think he's probably most famous for that Down with Love movie, but this is not that kind of podcast. All right, who else?
Okay, here's a big one: David Anspaugh. He's got two.
Can you give me a time frame?
One's in the '80s, one's in the '90s.
Man, I'm gonna kick myself, but I don't want to drag this out. Who is it? What do we have?
Hoosiers and Rudy.
Wow. Wow. Again. Films that have to have an adult audience in order to carry, right?
Yeah.
So if we're pulling that out and they're not overwhelming blockbusters, I guess what you're saying here is that, so I just named off the top of my head, I got everyone but Anspaugh. So Hoosiers, Rudy, we said Tin Cup, White Men Can't Jump, Bull Durham, Peyton Reed did Bring It On.
And then
these are all...
Yeah, they're big.
These are all adult-oriented films. What I mean by that is they're not appealing to seven-year-olds. They're not appealing to the Oscars, and they're not appealing to like the summer blockbuster where you're competing with, you know, Star Wars and Jurassic Park and Marvel. Okay.
And again, more of these guys, and I'm going to kind of build a theme of this.
Yeah.
Boaz Yakin did Remember the Titans. Peter Berg did Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights, yeah.
David S. Ward did Major League and The Program. Thomas Carter directed Coach Carter. Gavin O'Connor, probably one of the more successful guys on this list, did Miracle and Warrior. Phil Alden Robinson, guess what movie he did?
Phil Alden, what sports movie?
Yeah. We've talked about it already.
We've talked about it already?
Yeah.
I know he did Sneakers, didn't he?
I'm
he
not
did
sure.
the movie Sneakers. Oh, Field of Dreams. Field of Dreams.
Yep, that's the Field of Dreams.
Okay, yeah. I remember Sneakers just because Redford. And, yeah. Okay. Again, these are films that you would need 25 to 55-year-olds to go out and buy a ticket to see on a Tuesday night, which is just sort of pattern of behavior that doesn't exist.
And they're directed by hacks. Hollywood has completely lost the ability to bring in working directors to do these types of films. Because at the end of the day, these types of films, now, if they're going to get made, they need brand name directors. They need directors who are going to pick sports to be the subject of their next project, right?
Hang on. Let me stay with this thought for a second. So you're saying
go for it.
So is it kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy where award-winning filmmakers aren't grabbing that sports script because they think it won't get made, and then therefore whatever sports scripts get made, they can't then attract A-list production and direction talent? Is that fair
basically
to say?
Yeah, I mean, because again, the decline of the movie star, a lot of these movies have at least one or two people that would become bankable, right? So again, you look at Field of Dreams or Bull Durham, who again, all these movies have kind of like
the entire Kevin Costner au revoir. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So it's like you've got all of Costner's output. You've got Gene Hackman here. You've got Denzel Washington doing Remember the Titans, right? Because again, the formula used to be people like sports. I've got a movie star attached to this, and I've got a working director who's not a household name, not somebody people really care about their filmography, but they're working to make the movies that are populating the non-poppy parts of the calendar that come out every single year.
I have a question for you. I have another list that I pulled in research, and it's from the Sports Business Journal this year. And it was kind of built around the coverage of, again, F1. and the kind of like mercurial nature of sports movies being bankable blockbusters.
Yeah.
I've got a list here by sports subject matter. It's not as funny as the Wikipedia entry that had, like, you know, all of the Fast and Furious in it. And I want you to tell me if you think these films would ever go to a theater now. Most of these films premiered outside of the streaming culture. So F1's on here. We'll throw that one out. Okay. I'm going to start with probably just a great film, I think, that supersedes the sports genre. Penny Marshall's A League of Their Own in 1992 made $287 million. Do you think A League of Their Own would make it to a theater today?
I think it would if we can supplant. Penny Marshall is tricky. Penny Marshall, if she, let's say Penny Marshall started her career at A24. And Penny Marshall developed a cult following in that way. A League of Your Own goes to A24, probably has a smaller cast. I mean, maybe some of the same people, but you're probably not getting, you know, the Tom Hanks of your time, right? Maybe you're getting, actually, maybe Adam Driver does that role, right? A24 is doing it probably.
Man, if we're doing a recast, I would love to see Adam Driver as an alcoholic women's baseball team coach. That sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and what's interesting also, that might not be a movie because A League of Their Own got remade into an Amazon streaming series. And that's another thing I want to discuss. Yeah.
I think you're arguing for no, it would not be a movie in theaters. All right.
Correct. I don't think it would be a movie, period. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to throw another one at you.
Okay.
This one's going to hit not only in the whatever happened to sports movies, but also whatever happened to this genre. Caddyshack. Came out in 1980, the original, grossed to $147 million. These are all adjusted for inflation, by the way. So every number I'm giving you is in American $2025 dollars. Caddyshack, unequivocal success. Everybody's dad or grandfather's favorite movie, right? Caddyshack. Yeah. Would Caddyshack see a theatrical release today?
Caddyshack only gets made now if Lorne Michaels goes to Universal and says, hey, I've got these guys, they can do this thing, you know, can you just put it on Peacock?
So if like the Lonely Island did Caddyshack, it would go to Peacock is what you're saying.
Jeez. Basically, yeah.
This is so fun and not at all depressing.
If it gets made, again, if it gets made, all right, okay. The nature of comedy has completely changed, yeah.
Okay, all right, I got another one for you. We're going to continue just to destroy people's hope and childhood. You ready? 1993 grossed $326 million on today's standards. Family film. Comedy again. Classic. My wife quotes it. Not a sports fan. Not a sports fan to this degree, I should say. Sorry. Cool Runnings.
No. That's going to go to Disney+.
That's an instant no?
Yeah, I mean, no, that's not a theater movie, not at all. That's Disney Plus, and it gets released on like a Wednesday in February, and you never hear of it.
Just gets dumped to Disney Plus, and your kids maybe see it in between episodes of Phineas and Ferb or something.
If they make it, that's the thing. Like you talk about,
all right,
if some of these movies like you know go to theaters, but right now it's a matter of like, do you get a green light?
Yeah. All right, Corey, here we're going to get into some real spiritualism here because like this next film, I think is maybe more beloved by its sports audience than anything else. 1977 grosses $140 million by 2025 standards. Corey, does Slapshot get made today?
No.
Wow.
Maybe if you get like the right people attached to it at Netflix and, you know, like Slapshot now would probably take. See, like comedy's almost dead cinematically. Like unless if Adam Sandler does if he actually
it's gonna go to Netflix, right? Because he has an exclusive deal with Netflix.
Yeah, okay.
So all right, last one. Yeah. Last one in this genre, and then we're gonna talk about a trick that has been used to keep sports movies alive. 2002, this is a sort of an underdog story of a film at a time when America was not as receptive to this particular sport as they are now. 2002, this also launched the career of a working actress today. Would the film Bend It Like Beckham get made today?
That's interesting. So Bend It Like Beckham would go to still probably today go to Sundance.
Yeah, so for background, unlike these other films that were largely American finance, American developed studio projects, Bend It Like Beckham made its way through the festival circuit. I'm glad you brought all this up for context, and then was imported over to America on a distribution deal. Ended up making $130 again US $2025 domestically, which at the time was kind of crazy because I don't know if the average American walking around a shopping mall in St. Louis or San Diego knew who David Beckham was.
Yeah.
So you're saying it would have a shot just because it was a small budget? Someone would take a flyer on it?
Yeah, you would probably get, because I think Searchlight put that one out at the time. It was a studio like that. It would still probably, again, the reviews would be, I think the reviews on that one were pretty darn good. Like, again, that's maybe coming out sometime in October, November. Like, it's going to hit the specialty market decently, but it's probably, the odds are very, very small. It'll be a transgressive hit. Again, like, because those types of movies really don't find their audiences in theaters anymore. Again, a lot of those movies were beneficiaries from the mode of transportation to which that content was produced, right? Again, theaters were the biggest mover of movies. And that is not necessarily the case anymore for some certain types of film. You know, it's like streaming and IP are the two biggest, you know, towers that have been built, you know, post 2010 that have really, really impacted just like the way that people engage with some of this stuff. And again, there are so many examples you could point to just in the last 5 years that are quote unquote sports movies, but very rarely like do any of them reach the zeitgeist. Like Challengers kind of got there, but that's because it was a Luca Guadagnino film with Zendaya where sports just so happened to be the plot line. People were not going to that movie because they love tennis. Maybe some were.
Great segue into what I think might be the last hook for us to see theatrical released sports films and actually get them made. Now, the problem with what I'm about to say is when I set out and looked at like the sports movies I could instantly recall, there were four sort of circles, buckets I could put them in. And it's like a Venn diagram because there's overlap in these four circles. Movies for kids, movies for adults, the feel-good genre of sort of that a lot of sports films occupy, and Oscar bait. And the fourth circle is what I want to talk about now, because there's a consistency in the gross list of films that are positioned around Oscar season that still see consistent theatrical release. So you've mentioned Challengers a couple times. That film came out in 2024 with the added benefit of an award season push. There's a whole bunch of these on the list that were positioned that way, marketed that way, and benefited from it financially. So I'm going to go through a whole list. I'm not going to have you answer each one, but this is kind of the theory I developed. All right. The Wrestler, about pro wrestling, comes out in 2008, does extremely well on a small budget for Darren Aronofsky, basically puts Mickey Rourke back in. I mean, he got an Oscar nomination for that, so puts him sort of back on the award circuit map. All right. So that's a success in 2008. One of the films I hate the most comes out of all time, comes out the next year, and that's The Blind Side, which I've done an entire other podcast on. That film, wildly successful. $439 million domestic, Corey, before it won Sandra Bullock an Oscar in 2009. Seabiscuit in 2003. All right, another Oscar bait film. Clint Eastwood's all over this. Invictus makes $173. That's for those of you who don't know, that's Matt Damon in a film about rugby during apartheid in South Africa. Million Dollar Baby, a film about a female boxer. There's a consistent trend throughout the years as what you've described wanes off, and we move through the modern era. We still see some sports movies come out if they are packaged and built like Oscar films. Do you think that that is a means of survival for sports films?
No.
Damn.
Not at all. Yeah. No, not at all. Because
why?
Here's the biggest thing. The Blind Side's not a hit today. Not at all. The Blind Side is absolutely one of the last standing pillars of how movies that didn't necessarily, again, you had a movie star, you had subject matter, college football people like, it came out around the holidays, it gathered moss, but physical media is still a big deal then. People are still mainly going to theaters to watch movies. Streaming doesn't exist. Again, now it's like that movie might get made, but again, like it's maybe going to come out at a certain point where people will see the trailer and again, their brains are going to go, oh, wow, that looks pretty good. I'll wait till it gets home. Because again, what are they going to go see around the holidays? In 2009, that was the big Thanksgiving movie. And now this year, the big Thanksgiving movies are Wicked and Zootopia 2.
What about the success or moderate success of the, let's call it the extended Rocky universe for a second? So I'm talking about the Creed franchise, the Rocky reboot, and then the Creed franchise. It seems like those films can find footing, right? Have a theatrical release. I believe they're all on Prime now. I think there might be a deal there with Amazon. Those films still exist. What are they doing differently? What, how is that surviving? Is it a, is it because of the franchise part of it?
Yeah, it's just a simple thing. It's just, it's because it's Rocky. It's because people have nostalgia for Rocky. It's like right now, if you like did like The Sandlot as adults, like people would go see that in theaters because of the nostalgic thing, but you couldn't make The Sandlot now. You can't do that. Like, again, because again, the director of that movie, David Mickey Evans. And again, sports movies right now are getting made. They're just going straight to streaming where they can populate the place, right? Again, that's, they're also, they're faith-based sports movies. There, you know, there's that whole subgenre that's really been built up. You can see sports movies get made there. But again, if you want a classic, good sports movie that has a movie star in it that's going to do stuff, you can do one of two things right now. One, you can get a big director who's interested in the subject matter, right? We got Ping Pong coming out in December, Marty Supreme, Timothy Chalamet, big movie star, one of the Safdies, big rising director. A24 wants to get into more higher budget stuff. The stars align, you get a Ping Pong movie that I think will do decently well. The other option, you could do racing. Racing is the safest, that and any sort of like, you know, mixed martial arts type stuff. If you go,
it's crazy. I just want to let the listeners know, Corey did not see my notes before this. The last thing I had written on here were the two exceptions. And and this was outlined by the Sports Business Journal. This has been outlined by Deadline and Variety as I've done research on this, which is that for some reason, relative to the popularity scale of sports in America, football is king. Football does not actually represent very well at all in film not and television. It's incredibly hard to shoot. This is something I know a lot about. Baseball, waning interest over the last couple of years. We're seeing a minor renaissance after these last two World Series. Basketball, somewhere mid right there. There are a couple great hockey films we can cite. Obviously, you know, Shoresy has built a success as a streaming television program. But the outsize, the thing that doesn't match up relative to the popularity in the United States is combat sports, boxing, and now mixed martial arts, and racing.
Yep.
I was going to ask, what's your theory here? Is it just that those two lend themselves to the visual medium of film better?
International money. That's where it is. People want to know where, like, what's keeping movies alive in part? International audiences. Domestic audiences, again, there's a pretty good, you know, money share that you're going to get from the right kind of mixed martial arts film. Like, again, those are a little trickier to do. The Creed franchise does pretty darn well because it's Creed, because it's Rocky, because you've got this whole mythos. Like, that's IP. So you can almost set that to the side. Racing movies, again, we've had a few racing movies lately with Ford vs. Ferrari did very well. Gran Turismo, which again is a video game, but again, an adaptation that did very well. And then obviously this year's F1, which is one of the big financial successes, getting some talk for a Best Picture nomination potentially.
Really?
And again, it's because,
I liked it. I just didn't think of that in the context of Best Picture. By the way, technically, Apple released, Apple is the producer of the film. I keep going back to this. They are... Their boilerplate PR is that technically F1 is now the highest grossing sports film of all time. So it kind of defeats the question we're asking today, except you just look at this one film that had the support of one of the biggest companies in the world and had a mega a movie star. And really, I would have just I would describe this as not a negative description. I hope it's it'll probably be received as much. I did not walk away from F1 with the same feeling that I had necessarily of like Bull Durham or, you know, Miracle, which is a little bit more family-ish, or even like a highbrow film. It felt more like an interactive ride, which in the summertime, I put down my $13. Like, I'm fine with that and enjoyed the experience. I just don't know if I would necessarily qualify it the same way as
Here's the big thing with F1. Who directed it?
Oh, the guy who did Top Gun Maverick, right?
Exactly. That's the thing. That was a whole big selling point for that. This is from the Top Gun Maverick guy.
So basically, like, almost sort of an extension of a franchise, and they use Brad Pitt. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been bleak, Corey. I'm going to pivot very quickly. I'm going to ask you one question, and then I'm going to ask you for some recommendations. Okay. What is the way forward? Is it that just much like the era and the world that we lived in 1995, it's just that those things can't come back because we can't capture single zeitgeist anymore? Is that basically what you're saying about sports films as well as any other aspect of pop culture?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's part of it is like part of the question, where do sports movies go, deals with your own nostalgia for a time where the only way you could engage with art was through precious resources like theaters and home video stores, right? It's okay. Because the culture was different. The world was different. The world was simpler. A lot of the movies people love are 80s, 90s sports movies that they watch when they were a kid.
Okay.
Watch with their parents, right? Yeah, so it's just like, the nostalgia of it, I think, plays a huge part in people wondering kind of where it went, because we live in a world where people are wondering where everything went all the time, and it dictates a lot of what happens.
Ooh, I like that philosophically. That's very, very interesting. All right. I'm going to ask you to leave us with this. Give us, give the audience some sports films, maybe the last 10 years even, that have come out that they probably haven't seen. The one that I'm actually thinking of that I'll throw out there, I don't know if you've seen it. Corey, by the way, in real life, is the person where I just text, hey, I have no time in my life. I'm on a plane. Mm-hmm. It's these three films. He's like my sommelier. I was like, I have these three films on the Delta thing. Which one am I watching? And then Corey will tell me before I take off. So I've done this before. Ephes is the one that I've heard the most about that I feel like I want to check out.
Very, very good. Yes, very good. Independent film directed by Carson Lund. It is basically like, these folks who grew up playing baseball are all adults now. They're kind of in like a professional rec league, and the field that they play on is about to get like bulldozed for something else that's being built. And you just kind of follow a day in these people's lives. It's excellent. And it literally just came out this year, but there are sports movies. And again, this is one of the big things that I would challenge the audience. If you wonder where sports movies are, dig. That's where you got to find them. You got to find them in the dirt. Like again,
that film, by the way, Ephes, it's two E's, then P-H-U-S. Kind of funny, funny title. I think it's the name of a pitch in baseball.
Pitch, it's like a special type of pitch.
Okay. All right. What else you got?
Okay. So if you're just gonna go sports movies that have come out lately, Air that Ben Affleck did about Michael Jordan and the sneakers and everything. Really, that's like the kind of throwback sports movie that would have been really popular 20 years ago. Actually did pretty well at the box office. It's a very good movie, and it's kind of those are the type of movies I wish we got more. But the reason that got made in part is because Ben Affleck wanted to direct it, which again is a big reason why, if you want to keep seeing these movies, the directors have to be interested in the subject matter.
And Amazon, I think Amazon produced that one, and so it kind of had a built-in deal where it was going to live on Prime as a streamer. So
Adam Sandler has a Netflix film called Hustle, which is really good. It's about, it's kind of takes place in the world of basketball. He's a coach. Anthony Edwards actually acts in that movie and is actually pretty good. Does a really good performance. The Fire Within, which is a movie that came out last year about the women's boxer Clarissa Shields, that was directed by Rachel Morrison, who was Ryan Coogler's DP for a while. It's on Amazon Prime, I'm pretty sure. Really a good movie. Brian Tyree Hill's in a supporting role. Really, really good.
Okay.
If you just want kind of a good old fashioned sports, I don't know. I mean, the problem with those movies, and again, it's a whole other discussion, is a lot of them were never really that great to begin with. But that's a whole thing.
Sports films?
Some of them really just weren't very good.
You've uncovered a conversation here. We can go back to the recommendations in a second. Are you just saying that maybe so the conceit of this, of the question that we're asking today, are we just trapped in our own nostalgia here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Is The Sandlot a good movie?
Oh, God, now you're really going to piss my wife off, Corey.
Yes, that's the one. That is always the one when people look back, or Angels in, again, like all this stuff. But again,
Angels in the Outfield is not a good film. Yeah. It was just watched a lot in my house. Mm-hmm. Like Angel, like Rookie of the Year, Little Big League, those ones that I mentioned earlier. Nobody was winning an Oscar for those films, for sure.
No, not at all.
Yeah, to your point. Yeah, The Sandlot is the one everyone really wants to die the hardest for, though, for sure. Mm-hmm.
It's the feeling of nostalgia. I don't think it's a bad film necessarily, but I think that I interviewed Patrick Mahomes over the summer, and I asked him what his four favorite movies were. Three of them are sports staples, right? Remember the Titans, Friday Night Lights, The Sandlot. The other one's Top Gun. So it's like, again,
Top Gun, the original?
Oh yeah, the OG.
Oh, he's a purist.
So yeah, absolutely. So it's, we have all these movies that people attach so much meaning to because it meant something to them as a child. And again, if you grew up around sports and you loved these sports movies that were very, very strategically, you know, again, well, I don't say strategically, because a lot of these movies just happen organically. And that's another big thing, is just that, like, a lot of these sports movies that I'm recommending now, they were not big organic hits. I mean, Air did pretty decently, but that in and of itself, you know, is very, very difficult to do now. And it's just like, you know, if you want to know where some of your favorite sports movies went, like, I mean, where did you go? That's always the big question for people wonder. It's like, you know, declining theater attendance is always going to end up being a thing because people got used to the convenience of streaming, and the unintended consequences, you just get less. And if you do have options, you don't know where they are because they're not a part of your regular day conversation, you know? And again, like, it's so weird. If you wanted to sit down with your family tonight and watch a movie about LeBron James, you could pull up Peacock and watch Shooting Stars. I haven't seen it. It's not a movie that really registered with anybody's, you know, talk of anything. You know, maybe it's a pretty good movie. I have no idea. But the way we consume changes what we get. And I think that that's just one of the unfortunate side effects of changing digital landscapes. It's just that some things get left behind.
During the pandemic, I tried to watch the LeBron Space Jam with my kids, and it is very rare that I actually get up and just completely dismiss a film outright after 30 minutes, and that was one of the few winners of that accolade. I'm going to leave you on a little bit of a hopeful note. I want to try here, and I do appreciate your brutal honesty. What we've learned here today is that sports movies exist. They just exist on a much smaller scale. They're never really going to be able to capture public attention as a sort of whole, as I keep going back to the word zeitgeist. But the same could be said about anything in the entertainment space, in the information space, because we're simply just inundated with options. But the films are still being made to a degree, if they don't end up as television series, and they're just sort of parked in corners of the larger entertainment library. Because of all those things, and because we're now making content at different scales, and not everything is a movie budget like it was back then, or a TV budget like it was back then, I'm going to try and spin this positively and recommend a film and see what you think about this situation. I'm not a basketball person by any stretch. It's my least favorite of the major American sports. I just didn't grow up on it. I didn't really grow up around it. I'm also an Atlanta Hawks fan, so that couldn't help. But I really, really, really appreciated the film High Flying Bird by Steven Soderbergh. Great movie. Steven Soderbergh, for those of you who don't know, famous kind of in every tentpole as a director, almost every tentpole. My favorite film of his is actually Out of Sight, but he became famous on the indie scene in the 1990s for a film called Sex, Lies, and Videotape. If you're an LSU fan, it was shot in Baton Rouge, where his dad was a professor. He's also the director of the Oceans franchise. He did Aaron Brockovich. Help me here, Corey. I think we've hit all of his career highlights.
Traffic.
So he's done Oscar films. He's done crowd pleasing movie star films. He's done indie films. He's really done it all. He's also very prolific even later in his career. Logan Lucky is the one that I feel my co-host Ryan Nanny would be angry if I didn't mention Logan Lucky, which I just saw for the first time this year.
It's amazing.
Magic Mike. Movie. Everybody's mom's favorite film. Okay, we're done. We got it. By the way, he put out a movie that was really nice this year called Black Bag that probably should have gone straight to streaming. I really enjoyed it. It's like, God forbid, it was a tight 90 minutes. Parents, you could watch this after you put your kids to bed and still get the appropriate amount of sleep. That's how exciting I was about this film. Anyway, he made a film that kind of I know it went straight to Netflix. I don't think it had any kind of theatrical push whatsoever other than the very ceremonial premiere. And it kind of lived in the space of the pandemic. I think it came out in 19, and then its sort of push came through the pandemic when we were all doing weird stuff consumption-wise. High Flying Bird is basically about the NBA lockout from the perspective of several people inside the industry. And as I describe this, people who know my work are going to say, oh, of course Godfrey loved it. So it was all shot on iPhone 8s. It's kind of amazing. Soderbergh did it kind of quick and dirty. It's a lot of conversations. If I'm going to try and sell you on this, I would say it's got Zazie Beetz from Atlanta and from the Deadpool movies, Zachary Quinto. It's got Kyle MacLachlan in it. It's got, I can't remember her name, one of the cast members of The Wire. It is an ensemble film, all right? And it really centers around a couple different basketball players who are stuck in different situations in New York City during the lockout, financial concerns, contract concerns. And it's a little bit, I guess what we would say, Corey, it's kind of like day in the life of.
Yes, it's very much kind of in the, if you love Moneyball and love all the scenes that don't involve any sports, it's that type of movie where it's like, it's all the backroom sports.
There's really no sports in the film. There's a couple scenes that take place in a high school gymnasium for a kind of PR appearance at a charity event. Mm-hmm. It's 91 minutes. It's an aggressive 90 minutes. Like, it's very tight and it moves very quickly conversationally. And the reason why this film makes me hopeful, I don't really give that much of a shit about basketball or the NBA, but damn, do I love the mess inside the sports industry. It's where I've made my living. It's how I pay my mortgage. I don't think that film would have been made at all for anyone ever 20 years ago. What are your thoughts? It was shot quick and dirty. It has no sell whatsoever. It doesn't have any action. It's incredibly niche. Mm-hmm. There's no movie star attached to it whatsoever. I struggled to figure out who the lead is in terms of like whose name you would stick on a poster. Mm-hmm. The actor Andre Holland does a fantastic job, by the way. So I guess a little bit of pushback is we've lost this romantic idea of like mom and dad are going to go out to the theater and see Bull Durham, but maybe we've gained something in the interim if you, I guess, are already a very, very famous director and you have this incredibly niche idea and you could do it at scale. Is that fair?
It's interesting. I've been smiling the whole time.
Because I know, you're about to break my heart, aren't you?
Of all the filmmakers you chose, please, for the love of all things holy, do not Google what Steven Soderbergh thinks about the American movie future. It's not great. One of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. What's so interesting about High Flying Bird is, again, that goes into this idea. If a really good filmmaker who has clout can find use in the space, you can make High Flying Bird, and you can do it. He does it on a small budget. He can do it very economically. But again, like, you and I saw Marty Supreme earlier this month. If you want to see a big sports movie with a big actor and a big director get a big holiday time release, like, go see Marty Supreme. That is going to be a big litmus test for one, Timothée Chalamet's ability to sell a movie, and two, you know, just viability of having a big, you know, Oscar-y sports film that, you know, has potential.
Is it a sports film? So as we record this, and by the time everyone listens to this, we are in a weird window, which is that Corey is a movie critic and we live in the same city in Nashville. And sometimes I get to piggyback into press screenings well far in advance of a film's release. We have seen Marty Supreme. We both really liked it. I don't know if I'd call it a sports film. This is like, I think Marty Supreme is a sports film, is the 2025 version of his Die Hard a Christmas film. It's certainly not going to be sold as a sports film. Maybe they recut some commercials for ESPN. Maybe. And for those of you who don't know, it's a table tennis ping pong is sort of the backdrop of an otherwise Safdie Brothers film. You seen Uncut Gems? Like, you seen, what's the other one, High Life? It's a Safdie film, okay? Do you think they're going to even market or sell or push this thing as a sports film?
I think so. Timmy went on College Game Day last year while he was promoting A Complete Unknown. This is what's interesting. If you,
Corey, I think about that appearance all the time. I think about it all the time because I want to find the person who learned him up. I want someone in that PR camp. Yeah. And I don't know who his publicist is. Yeah. It's a story I'm dying to tell, weirdly, is how did Timothée Chalamet become an expert at college football for one day?
He's a sports guy. He goes to Knicks games all the time. This is what's interesting.
That dude knew about Mac football. I'm telling you right now, I don't believe that's there's something. Yeah,
he's got generational, as the children say, Riz. He has that kid could talk his way out of a spider's trap. You know, it's just he's special. But this is what's interesting to me. If you want to find some hope, find hope in this new class of movie stars that's starting to kind of come up a little bit. Timothée Chalamet, Marty Supreme, if they are interested in some of these new directors, if they're interested in making movies about sports, you're going to find maybe some better options. But, you know, it's so funny. Like, there was a really interesting movie that came out a few years ago called National Champions. It's not like an amazing movie, but it kind of dealt with this like crazy scenario of if a star athlete refused to go play in the national championship because he's trying to like change NIL. It's a little dated.
Yeah, it had J.K. Simmons in it. They shot it in New Orleans. Yeah, I got a press release about this because I think someone was trying to push it because I wrote the Bagman stories.
Yeah,
that movie just kind of just came and went, right?
And it's actually pretty good. Like
the plot is that a team is on the cusp of playing in the national championship game and a kid holds out. Basically.
Yeah. And it's like just very poorly timed. It's kind of right before NIL is really starting to kind of blow up. So they kind of missed the mark in some places. But, it's actually pretty good. And it's so funny. Sports movies have always been around. I mean, would you shock? It's like William Friedkin made a sports movie, Blue Chips, with Nick Nolte, talking about basketball recruiting.
Shaq. Like, yeah. Shaq's acting.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, all of these movies, they've always been there, and they kind of do still exist. The documentary, we haven't even mentioned the documentary format. Like, we get, 50 of those untolds on Netflix every single year now. Like, it's just, it's very, sports are all around us. Again, what was the big Michael Jordan Last Dance that happened during the pandemic, right? It's like,
yeah,
if you can find the right project and the right person to push it forward, the zeitgeist will accept you. I don't think that there's, a lack of appetite in sports related, obviously not. I mean, my goodness, that's one of the few things that people can agree on. But the means of transportation, man, like the way that we move the product from the inception phase to the audience, like it's completely destroyed so much of what movies used to be and the types of movies we used to get. But the one saving grace is that streaming needs content and they have to keep pumping it out to keep things fresh. And that is where I think sports movies can continue to live in the way that people used to like them. But if you're willing to kind of go for something more artsy, you can find Challengers, you can find Marty Supreme. But I don't think that the day of, where we were 30 years ago is ever going to come back. And, I don't necessarily feel like that's a quote unquote bad thing, because I still feel like we can make movies and have them make money. But, it's like, the grave question you have to ask is where did sports films go? Well, you have to ask, where did you go, right? Where are you getting your movies now? Are you going to the theaters? Are you supporting this stuff? And if all you're doing is rewatching Remember the Titans and Miracle and The Sandlot and all these movies on streaming, not to say it's your fault, but you are part of the problem. You've got to keep seeking out new things and challenging yourself to kind of find these movies, because they're out there. If you want to watch a great sports movie tonight you've never seen, you can find a good list of them. But, that's just the tough part.
Corey, speaking of content and putting yourself out there, where can people find you?
You can find me at USA Today's For the Win. I'm on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47. I'm on Letterboxd. If you have a Letterboxd account,
there it is.
Find me there. Yeah,
that's what's your Letterboxd handle?
I think it's just Corey Woodruff. You can type that into the little members page, and you can see a picture of me when I'm on the news when I was 9 years old. And it's got on the box, and they misspell my name. So that's
Corey Woodruff. Another day. last question: should people go to the movies?
Yeah, go to the movies. Here's my thing. The pandemic should have taught all of us that sitting at home all day sucks, and you need to go to a damn movie. Don't watch again.
I'm only laughing because I set him up for a yes or no question, and he went for the monologue. All right, Corey, thank you for coming on Phantom Island.
Absolutely, thanks for having me, bud.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.